You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening, watching to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. It's 12/21/21. The winter solstice is with us, and you're starting to feel the effects, although down here in Florida, not so much. But where my next guest is from, it was 18 degrees this morning. I'm talking about Lawrence Lepard, managing partner at Equity Management Associates. Lawrence, great to have you on the show. You know, one of the things that impresses me the most about you, obviously self-employed, but you've been doing the same thing for 18 years. And that's impressive on the street.
Or, well, oh, how about that? I'm stuck, as they would say, right? I mean, yeah, thanks for having me on, Kira. I don't think I've been on your show before, but I've always enjoyed watching it. It's nice to be with you.
Hey, you too. And so, Big, I watched your presentation both live and again on YouTube at the New Orleans Investment Conference, one of my favorite shows. And you were quite passionate about the thesis of honest money, of hard assets, gold and silver, and now added to that, another arrow in the quiver is cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin in particular. That's the one that you follow. I mean, when we go back to Murray Rothbard, and I know you're heavily into Austrian economics, he always advocated the concept of competing currencies. Yeah. And over the past decades, anytime anybody tried to come up with one, they basically wound up in a nice place where they got three square meals a day, lots of exercise, and close companionship, if you will. But now with cryptos, that seems to have broken that mold.
Well, that's right. Yeah. No, I remember that fellow. Was it Nothenberg or something? The guy who would try to do the dollar, right?
Yeah.
The mistake he made was calling it a dollar. The U.S. government doesn't like you calling anything a dollar. So good thing the Bitcoin guys didn't call it the Bitcoin dollar, or it wouldn't have worked. But yeah, no, I've been a big gold and silver person, sound money person for most of my career. I think it's really one of the big ills of our society that we've had this fake money, and it's led to a lot of inflation, a lot of malinvestment, and a lot of bad outcomes in society. And honestly, I was a little slow on picking up on crypto, although I bought some in 2014, but I didn't really fully understand what it meant. And I thought it was kind of an interesting technology experiment in the early days. And of course, since then, there's been a lot of bullshit around it. And I think that's why some people get scared away. They see these Doge coins or all these stupid ideas. And you know, they're like, well, I'm not going to mess with that. And they're right. I mean, some of the crypto, I mean, I never really like to say crypto. I say Bitcoin, period. I mean, Bitcoin is the signal. All that other stuff is noise. And some of the other stuff will work. But at the base layer, Bitcoin is a really important innovation. It's a problem that they tried to solve. Techies were trying to solve for 10 or 15 years. There were other companies and instances of where they tried to create, electronic money. And the problem was always you just couldn't control the supply. And you had the double spend problem, and you had, issues surrounding that. And so it took a group of people. I don't think it was an individual. I think Satoshi was actually a committee that did it and decided to remain anonymous because they didn't want to in any way poison the purity of the idea. And I think they managed to put together a bunch of interesting pieces of the puzzle, the cryptography, the hashing, the difficulty adjustment, et cetera. And it looks like they've done it. They've created a scarce digital form of money, which, is a competitor to gold, but also sits alongside gold because They're really an apple and an orange. I mean, you can't touch a Bitcoin, but it does exist in a network of servers, and you can certainly carry an ounce of gold anywhere in the world, and people know that it has value. So, I think there's a place for both.
Hey, well, one thing we've seen with Bitcoin is if you lose your key, you are dead meat.
And oh, that's
no matter whether you have one or a million. So I've come up with a new concept. We're going to do regressions, hypnosis, to get people to remember their key that they've lost, and we'll take a percentage of the recovery.
Isn't it the truth? I mean, it's like I talk to friends about it. We talk about it like it's like having the nuclear codes. I mean, you lose those codes and that's that. I mean, we all know the story of the poor guy in Britain who threw out a computer with a bunch of coins and keys on it. And he was digging, you know, and suddenly it became worth $10 million. And he was over at the landfill trying to find his computer, you know, to recover his keys. And,
he even offered to cut in the government, the local government, for a piece of it if they would just let him dig around.
But did he? Yeah.
Do it. I've got 0.2 Bitcoins floating around from when they were like $100. So it was $20. I can't remember that damn key. Now it's $10,000. Maybe that's the best type of forced savings you have. You forget your key and you lock it away in a safe and you can't get the key for 5 years.
Yeah.
Right?
You can't spend it. I mean, it's a forced hodl. The problem is, what if you can't get your key ever? I mean, interesting thing, a lot of companies are addressing this with key management systems and security systems. I mean, obviously, because it is like a nuclear code, you want to set up a system so that there is no possibility that your keys will be lost or stolen. And there are ways to do that.
Yeah. My friend printed his out. And he has it in a safe deposit box. And he owns a bunch of different currencies. But we've got like thousands and thousands of these currencies. I call most of them kleptocurrencies because they really have no role. They're just Johnny-come-latelys. But something like Ethereum, a couple of other ones look like they might have application, legitimate technological app.
Completely agree with you, Kerry. I mean, I call many of them shit coins because, frankly, a lot of them are just pump and dump pieces of shit. But having said that, there will be additional coins that will have innovations. And a lot of people are using Ethereum because you can build applications on it. And the way it's been, I'm not a techie, but the way it's been described to me is that Ethereum could be the application layer for the underlying Bitcoin. And you don't necessarily want to store value in Ethereum, but you might build apps in Ethereum and therefore it'll survive. And I suspect there could be other coins that have special use cases and those will become meaningful and they'll be different than Bitcoin. They won't solve the same problem that Bitcoin solves, but they'll solve some other problem. I mean, you know, it's been talked about, they've been talking about, we all pay a lot of money for property title insurance. And, you know, it seems entirely possible that all property titles would be put on a blockchain and you wouldn't have to pay for insurance. Everyone would know who owned what title. And, you know, so there will be crypto and blockchain apps, I believe, that will succeed. But they're different. They're not the same as Bitcoin. The Bitcoin app or the Bitcoin killer app, in my view, is it's a limited form of, you know, money. It's a digital money with a hard cap. And the world has never really seen a money with a hard cap. I mean, it's a deflationary money almost by definition, assuming that the population grows, the world activity grows. And even gold, which was the hardest form of money before Bitcoin came around, you know, the supply of gold grows about 1.7% a year. And what that means is that in 40 years, we'll have twice as much gold on the planet. Now, a lot of that will be in the form of jewelry around ladies' necks, but you know, the supply of gold does grow. And there will never be more than 21 million Bitcoins. And that's an interesting concept. I mean, if this becomes the savings vehicle, which I think it could become, you know, the value will kind of increase, I believe, over time for quite some time to very high numbers, by the way. Yeah.
It's fascinating to watch it, to kind of be a part of it. You know, I've been commenting on it for, you know, 7-8 years now, really. Yeah. I had my opportunity to get in on the ground floor and of course I blew it, but
we all did. Nobody owns enough of it. You know, we all own what we own. I mean, it's still not too late. I mean, I like to say to people, say, well, I can't pay $60,000. You were buying it for $6,000. I'm like, well, you know, 10 years from now, people are gonna say, hey, you bought a whole coin for $60,000. Holy shit. How'd you do that? You know, because at that point it'll probably be at $600,000. So
it's just like your home. If you bought your home 30 years ago, and you paid 5% of what it's worth now, but you were stretching and like not go out to eat and all of this. And then 30 years later, your home is worth, you know, it's your retirement fund, basically. The same exact thing. And
Exactly. So, I mean, the negative on your home is, unfortunately, all these local governments have figured out how to tax the shit out of it.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you don't get to carry it. You don't get to carry it free of taxes.
No, that's permanent. Death and taxes, we know. But so you've alluded to the 800-pound gorilla in the room, Lawrence, and that is what is known. Well, you and I being Austrians, I've been an Austrian for 44 years, believe it or not.
There you go.
We view inflation as a monetary issue, that the more currency units you have, the less they're worth. But the average Joe out there, as I like to call him, Joe Sixpack, or even Steve Chardonnay, who fancies himself a cut above Joe, they view it as higher consumer prices. And that's only the net result. Well, now we're seeing it. Our good friend John Williams, ShottaStats.com, saying 14%. The producer price index, close to 10%. The bogus CPI, even that's like 6%, over 6.8, almost 7%. We've never seen inflation like this. And you and I are old enough to remember back to the 70s. Most people on the planet now weren't alive during the 70s or were very young. Don't remember like the price of a McDonald's Big Mac going up weekly, you know, 5 cents a week. Yeah. Nobody remembers this, but you and I. So to them, this is a new phenomena. To you and I, as economic historians, we look back and we know it's as old as man.
You get these big cycles. I mean, we've had 40 years of deflation from the peak gold price in 1980. And yeah, I was a teenager in the 70s, and I mean, I recall very clearly my parents buying a car and a few years later, trading it in and getting more on the value of the trade-in they paid for it, because the prices were going up that fast. And I was working at a gas station, started out at about 23 cents a gallon early in the decade. And by the end of the decade, it was approaching a dollar. So, you know, inflation can be a very bad thing. And, you know, when it's 1 or 2%, as you mentioned, Kerry, a lot of people don't understand it. They don't see it. And it's kind of easy to hide it, but it's kind of gotten blatant now, right? I mean, there aren't many conversations I'm involved with and the people I come into contact with where people don't comment about how bad inflation has gotten and how much more they're paying for absolutely everything, if they can get it. I mean, the other thing that's become more apparent recently, and I've seen this in a couple of cases, is it's not just inflation, but it's not, things aren't available because they're sitting on a container ship off the coast of California. You know, and I know people in the building trades who are telling me they're having a very, very hard time getting supply to build houses with. And so, you know, we've really, this COVID thing has just really messed up the economy. And then, you know, what it's brought to light is how broken the monetary system is and how wrong Keynes was with his view that there's always a good solution to any economic downturn was always to print money and to try to, you know, get the pump primed and get things going again. And, you know, maybe printing money does, well, certainly in some cases it does stimulate activity, but it also increases debt and it also leads to inflation. And now that's blatant. And hopefully, as you point out, most people don't see it. I don't know. I mean, I think it's getting to be pretty obvious to more people, right? Yeah. So, you know, there's going to be we're coming to the point where something is going to need to be done. And I think the Fed is trapped, and it's going to be very interesting to see how they try to wriggle out of this trap. I don't think they're going to be able to.
No, definitely not. Inflation, just go back. There is a campaign slogan. What this country needs is a good 5 cent cigar.
I remember it well.
Woodrow Wilson's vice president after the inflation of World War One, because wars are by their nature inflationary. Right. Look, like what people don't realize is there's winners and losers from the inflation wars. The winners are the banks and the large corporations. Basically, every auto manufacturer, with the exception of Tesla, going into this inflationary round was completely insolvent because they were upside down on every car lease and every auto loan that they extended. They now have a huge asset on their books because all of their leases are actually, there's equity in the leases. And really, if you have an auto lease, you should never let it go back to the company now because it's probably worth 25% more than what you paid for it.
Don't just survive. Thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Fury Gold Mines is a Canada-focused exploration and development company committed to aggressively growing its scalable high-grade gold assets with major drill campaigns planned across its 3.5 million ounce portfolio. Fury is led by a management team of proven explorers and developers with a track record of success in advancing and financing project development. Fury Gold Mines is well positioned to create value for investors with low-risk development growth and the potential for a new major discovery. Fury Gold Mines trades on the TSX and NYSE American under the ticker FURY. To learn more, go to furygoldmines.com. That's furygoldmines.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
If you're like me, you're probably getting those mailing, those things in the mail that say, bring your car in, we'll pay you more, you know, right? They're looking for your car for that exact same reason. Yeah. Inflation benefits asset holders. It benefits the rich. It benefits the people who have access to low cost of capital. It does not benefit the working and the common man because the wage increases are the last piece of the puzzle. I mean, eventually the wages do increase. You know, the workers at John Deere just, you know, struck and got a good package. I mean, it was, they'd probably been beat on for years and they got some real adjustments. But, you know, that's after having been beat on for years. I mean, it comes last to the wage earner, which is why, you know, we've all seen the charts of how there's been just enormous productivity growth since 1971. I mean, I like to say, given what's gone on in technology, we all should be working 20-hour work weeks. I mean, we're so much more efficient.
I'm trying.
Right. We're all so much more efficient than we were in the 70s, and yet we're working just as hard, if not harder. And a lot of that productivity got scraped off by the upper middle class who were able to, you know, financialize it and make tons and tons of money in stocks and bonds. And, you know, and that's why you've got this huge wealth gap that you've got. And, you know, again, it's a moral issue, in my opinion. I talked about this in my New Orleans speech. You know, it all goes back to sound money. When you have unsound money, crafty financial people figure out ways to game the system, and they end up worth hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, you know, for really doing nothing more than gaming the system and pushing paper around. I mean, you know, Colbert, Kravis, and Roberts are multi-billionaires for basically just doing leverage buyouts. I mean, they buy these companies, they load them up with debt, they strip them of the employees, they gross up the earnings as much as possible, and then they sell them to the next sucker.
They
blow them out and they make hundreds of millions and billions doing that. There's no value added, yet they're some of the richest people in our society. And that's only possible because the money is unsound. That's why it happens, right?
This is a battle that has been taking place in the country since the 1800s, since Carnegie faced off against J.P. Morgan and Ford. Henry Ford the first didn't want that company to go public, wanted it to stay private because Wall Street securitization, financialization doesn't add any value per se. It can make things more liquid and more easy to transact, but it literally is the tail that's wagging the dog now. We're over-financialized. Way too many people are traders instead of engineers. And hey, I don't blame them. In the least, I've done it myself, but I never went into manufacturing.
Andrew Jackson, you know, look, the fight started with, you know, with Jefferson and Hamilton, but then Andrew Jackson continued it. And, you know, he reached out against the National Bank and was able to kill it. But, you know, and they kept it dead for some time. You know, Lincoln messed around with greenbacks. But, you know, 1913 was a really bad year because it was the year the Fed got created. It was the year they introduced the income tax.
Yeah.
At that point in time, the federal government just gained a whole lot of power. You know, I mean, most people don't really understand that pre-1913, there were no income taxes in this country.
None.
You know, basically, there were taxes on trade, there were taxes on tariffs, there were fees you paid, et cetera, et cetera. This country operated perfectly fine without having to hand over 30, 40, 50% of your earnings to the government. And, you know, all the social programs and everything else that got created, you know, have created a government. And you know, the government, their number one job is not to make our lives great. Their number one job is to perpetuate their own jobs.
Like any other living organism,
right?
Survival is the first order of business.
Exactly. And so they've done a very good job of doing it. And it's a very, you know, hand in glove relationship with the large organizations. You know, big government benefits from having big banks, and big banks benefit from having a Federal Reserve. And so, you know, I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine. And that's all fine, except that the average person, the average American, suffers in the system greatly. And that's why, and it's sad because so many of those average Americans, they know they're suffering, but they can't put their finger on the reason. And it's sophisticated. It's not because they're stupid. It's just because they don't, it's because, you know, this is a peas and shells game where the guys who control the peas and shells, they're pretty good at moving them around. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it's all intangible.
Right.
The prices that you're paying, the higher prices are tangible, but the reason why they're going up, unless you study it, you're just never going to know because it's not intuitive. Hey, Lawrence, it's been really great having you on the show. Where do we find you, connect with you on the web? And
yeah, thank you, Kerry, very much for having me. So there are two areas. One, you can go to my website. I've got a lot of papers. It's all free. A lot of writing about the economy and fairness and so forth. It's EMA, Edward Mark Alpha, those three letters, the number 2.com. And you Google me, you'll find the website. It stands for Equity Management Associates. And then I'm also very active on Twitter. I'm kind of a big mouth on Twitter, but you know, some people appreciate that, others don't. But it's just my name, you know, the circle A and then Lawrence Lepard, one big long word on Twitter. And yeah, I try and comment, you know, almost entirely on sound money. I mean, sound money is, it's really the issue I care the most about. I mean, if you want to drain the swamp, you know, and I'm very sympathetic to draining the Washington swamp, both sides. I think you start with sound money. And my byline on Twitter, it's taken off of that old show. I can't recall the name of it now, but it's fix the money, fix the world.
Yeah. You
know, I think the money is broken. The monetary system is fundamentally broken. If we fix the monetary system, I think we're going to be very pleasantly surprised with how much better a lot of other things get along with it.
But there will be some pain along the way, though. You can't avoid the pain.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And we may be entering a period of severe pain. But the flip of that is, you know, how do you get, you know, you got to go through a storm to get to the bright side on the other side. And so the bright side's definitely there. I can see it. I know it's there. And it doesn't have to be that painful if, you know, if we don't get into a shooting war. Yeah. You know, I mean, all the assets and people will still be here. Guess what will happen? It'll be just a different set of people who are rich.
Yeah, that's all right.
And that's okay, right. It'll be the people who own sound money, not the financial class that's figured out how to game the system. You know, yeah. And I tell you, I'd take the sound money people in government running it, you know, over the financial class, you know, 3 days a week and twice on Sunday, right?
So true. And all we can hope for is that it happens sooner rather than later, and that we can restore fiscal sanity to the country.
Oh, God, yeah.
And the world. If you got a question, because we didn't even mention that this is the first time in history that every currency in the world is fiat-based.
Yep.
All the instability that's resulted from that. If you got a question for Lawrence, shoot me an email, kl@kerrylutz.com. Make sure you go over to financialsurvivalnetwork.com, sign up for our free newsletter, and Lawrence, we will talk to you again. Thanks so much.
Great. Thanks, Kerry. Nice to be with you.
Thanks for listening to Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.